You're listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the Nations.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You are on with the Wise Guys, and it's a blessing to have you here with us, and we want to thank you for your patience. This is a conversation of the living.
Yes.
Life, to life.
Mm-hmm. Right?
I knew there was a song that was going to come up at some point this morning.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We have a good show planned out. We have a good conversation planned out for everyone this morning, and I want you guys to stay tuned because we have a wonderful lady coming on at 8:30. Her name is Linda Watson. She does a show here on the Hebrew Nation Radio online, and it's called The 12 Tribes, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And this is a lady that has a tremendous amount of knowledge in her head, and it's just a cool lady. I like her, you know. She's.
When did we have her out? A year or two ago?
I think so. Yeah.
Kind of lose track of time.
Yeah. See, it's been a little while, but it was really nice to kind of hear her in person.
In person, yeah. She came and talked to the congregation for about what, 2 or 3 hours?
Yeah. When she was, I guess hit a couple of different assemblies throughout the valley here,
and she was making her rounds.
Yeah. Now we can. Reconnect.
I love it. You know, the other thing we're going to be talking about for the first little bit is we're going to be asking you guys this question, all right? Is it important for you to go to the classroom of humbleness? Is it important for us to go to the classroom of humbleness?
Where's that located?
Where would that classroom be?
Because I don't want to go there.
1-800-548.
Humble me now.
I know, right? You know, I was listening to a show this morning, and it just struck me that many times we do not necessarily pray for humbleness. We don't pray for it. But in actuality, from Scripture, we know that in order to be a servant of Yah, to be a servant of God, to be a follower of Yeshua, He asks us to humble ourselves and to follow Him. So do you guys ever think about praying for humbleness? I mean, like, Father God, as Yahweh, as I come before you, I ask that you give me a whole dose of humbleness today. I mean, do we ever do that?
Probably not enough. But when you do that, you better be ready.
You ready?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
To be humbled.
Oh, yeah. I one of the guys I listened to on a different radio station said that he did this.
Really?
You know, and he followed this direction, and he prayed for humbleness, and he was humbled far beyond he ever imagined.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah. So he says, you know, be careful what you're praying for. When you pray for it, be ready for it.
Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you pray for. Oh, my goodness. Humbleness. Do we ever, in today's society, we usually think about ourselves, and we think about success, and we think about motivation, and we think about making a difference, and everyone wants to be recognized. But do we ever say, hey, I'm willing to be a servant, I'm willing to be humble? I mean, and if not, what's the process of learning to become humble? You have a text going on with you?
No, I'm looking for a text, but what does it say? If you want to be great in His kingdom, be a servant of all?
Yeah.
You know, I think we talked about this earlier. Every individual in His word, Moshe, he had to be humbled first, didn't he? Moses.
Yeah, he had to be a shepherd.
I think Elijah had to be humbled first.
Yeah, he had to go out to the wilderness.
He had to go out there.
And be fed by ravens.
Yes.
Well, what do we mean, humble? I mean, what is that?
Humble or humble?
Humble.
You had a definition there, didn't you?
Yeah. Let's see what this says here. It says, having or showing a modest or low estimate of one's own importance. Let me read that again.
Yeah, you better.
Having or showing a modest or low estimate of one's own importance.
But does that almost sound like just low self-esteem?
Well, let's go on here. It has a couple more.
I'm just asking. Is that a question?
The second definition, this is there are two adjective and one verb definitions that I've got here. So the second of the adjective is of low social, administrative, or political rank.
Of low.
Like a servant.
Social, political, or administrative rank.
Yeah. Position.
Yeah.
You know what? Back when I was young, I was thinking, boy, it'd be really cool to be the dean of students. And I became the dean of students because there was a...
Was it really cool then?
Was it as cool as you thought it would be?
Because I thought it was a high administrative rank. And because there's a big title and I'm going, okay, mm-hmm. I get to be in charge. Well, you know what I got to be in charge of? Cleaning the toilets and emptying the trash. Staying up late at night.
Didn't you feel important?
Like calling parents.
Boy, isn't that true? You got to be, you know, be careful about what you... You asked for
it. I know, right?
You prayed for it and you got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't quite what you anticipated.
No.
So the verb finishes off.
Yeah.
The verb definition is lower in dignity or importance.
Lower in dignity or importance.
What does that mean to you? I mean, when you see that picture, I mean, you have this look on your face like, wow, that's quite the statement. But what is the picture? What's the picture? Any of you guys have a picture of that? Humbleness of dignity and...
In the shadows.
Behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes. Yeah.
You know, behind the scenes, that picture reminds me, because actors always think that they're the most important, right?
Yeah.
But it's the people...
As a thespian, I would have to say that... Oh, never mind. That doesn't sound...
There are so many people behind the scenes.
Yeah, right.
Making that all...
Making it happen.
Yes.
The scenes, the cameras, the...
Everything.
The costumes, the backdrops. And the actors just speaking.
Yeah, they just, yeah.
They're just a hired voice.
Yeah, right.
They get all the glory.
Yeah, they're not even writing the script.
No.
No.
They're just reading the script.
Yeah. It's not their words. It's not their actions. No.
Wow.
So, yeah, man, humble.
He has told you, man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of him?
Were you reading?
But to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God.
With Yahweh.
That's Micah 6:8.
There's that word.
I love that one.
Yeah. He has told you, O man, what is good. And what does Yahweh require of you? But to do justice,
love
kindness or mercy, and to walk humbly with Yahweh. Wow.
What is it? 6 what?
Micah 6:8.
I changed Bibles, and I like to have those good ones.
You didn't transfer over all your notes?
Not yet. I will, but...
You know,
that takes time.
Yes, it does.
It actually starts back up on 6:6. With what shall I come to Yahweh and bow myself before the Elohim on high? Shall I come to him with burnt offerings and with yearling calves or the best that I have? You know, in 8 it goes down. Well, he's told you what is good. What does the Lord require of you?
Okay. Yeah, there's a song of that.
Yes.
I love it.
But to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with Yahweh. It's what a...
Oh, it's a great, yeah.
You know,
it's a great passage.
We have another custom, Rick.
Yes, we do, and we got to do it.
So,
Father, help us. Let's pray.
Yeah.
Father in heaven, we just thank you. We thank you for again, your guidebook that teaches us how to walk. How to walk as Yeshua walked. Father, help us today. It's all we have. Father, help us to walk the way you would have us. Father, and for any assignment you would have, you'd put us on today. We know that you don't give us more than you will help us to fulfill. Help us, Father, today to walk justly, mercy, and walk humbly with you today. We need you. We need you, Father, as it's getting darker. But thank you, Father, that you, Yeshua, Messiah, Yahweh Yeshua, are getting brighter as the darkness tries to dispel the light. But Father, thank you that your light, you the light, will dispel the darkness. And we know the end of your word that tells us, Father, that we're headed for the kingdom. Give us kingdom eyes today to walk. And we need you like never before. Mm. May our light house shine. Help us not to be foghorns, Father, to be lighthouses. And when the time arises, if it does today, help us to be ready to give an answer for the hope that we have. That your name, through each one of us, will be exalted, glorified, and lifted up. In Yeshua's holy name, we dedicate this time to you. Amen.
Rick, you've said that foghorn thing before.
Oh, yeah.
What does that
Some
mean?
Some things don't change. We just want to be... There was a time that I was more of a foghorn than a lighthouse. I'm learning to be more of a lighthouse. You guys probably don't have those kinds of issues. But, you know, especially when you first come to this realization and this biblical roots walk.
Yeah.
At least for me, all I can speak is for me, that I had this zealousness to want to tell everybody about that my eyes have been opened to some things I didn't see. Hmm. And it was amazing to me that not many of them were quite as excited as I was about this.
So do you have to become humbled?
I have been humbled.
It mm-hmm. has humbled me in a good way. His Torah, his instruction for his people does humble you, doesn't it?
Mm.
It really makes us realize on our best day, it's all about him. He, the best we have, the best of our righteousness is filthy rags, his word says, compared to his righteousness. So our righteousness is so, but that's why we pray to help may his light shine through us.
Rather than ours.
Yeah, well, our lights, yeah.
we always get stuck with that thought. I mean, whenever we get proud or lofty,
right,
and we have this some idea that that everyone's going to follow us or listen to us, that's pridefulness. And
I think when you first come to a realization of some things you haven't realized, that there's a zealousness a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
When you guys first found the giver of life, you were probably so young, you probably never remembered not walking with him. But I remember not walking with him.
Yeah. I've heard stories.
I think I can.
And when I did see the light, that was my mission. To go and share the wonderful thing that happened to me.
That is a zealousness, but I'm wondering if sometimes the Spirit can move us in such a way, the wrong type of Spirit, that our zealousness is more about ourselves, about what we found, rather than having the conversation that we usually talk about, which is letting people share with us where they've been at, and then maybe offering in humbleness that, hey, we've been down this road before, and we'd like to share something with you.
Have you ever thought of this?
Right.
You know, just, but I think you just said it, getting their story first, find out where they're at.
503-589-1220 is where you want to be. You're going to actually call in if you think you need to come to the classroom of humbleness.
We do need to hear from you. If the Father's speaking to your heart, say, you know, I should call in. I've thought about it a lot of times, but I never have. We need to hear from you.
503-589-1220. Still learning this new number.
And if you want to listen via your phone, you just got to call this number, any phone, 605-562-9746.
Right on.
And listen to Hebrew Nation Radio, any program that's going on from 8 to 10 every Tuesday morning, the Wise Guys.
Yep. And we have other great shows being lined up
everywhere
on the Hebrew Nation.
Yeah.
A lot of new people coming on.
Oh, good
Pretty
to
amazing.
Hear that.
Yeah. Hey, I have another text for you.
Okay, we need to hear it.
This is on the Mount of Beatitudes.
Oh, okay. Matthew 5, maybe?
Yeah, Matthew 5. And 5:5.
Okay.
Grace and grace. Matthew 5:5, grace. Well, number 5 is, I don't know if you know this, Aaron, but in Hebrew, 5 stands for grace.
Number 5
But not
grace.
Gracie.
No.
Okay.
So chapter 5:5, blessed are the gentle. In the other translations, blessed are the humble. For they shall inherit The earth.
Yeah, mine says the meek.
Yeah, that's humbleness.
Yeah, humble.
Hmm. Meek. Humbleness.
Yeah.
So blessed are those that are that way, because you'll inherit the earth.
Boy, that's huge.
Yeah.
And I like the next one. Blessed are those who hungers and thirsts after righteousness, for they shall be filled. See?
Hunger.
Are you guys hunger?
Oh, I'm hungry.
Are you hungry for more of him, more righteousness? I am.
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever feel like you lack it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ever?
I mean, yeah. Don't you?
Oh.
Yeah.
Rhetorical question.
Yeah, right.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, but you know, his word, it never gets old, does it?
Yeah.
It's just his word is new every morning.
You know, one of the places I've found, I don't know about you guys, but back in the day, I always thought that it'd be fun really not to, well, I wanted freedom, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I'd moved from this pastorship sort of thing, and I wanted freedom. Freedom! And I just wanted to just not deal with people, right?
You just wanted to be reclusive?
Yeah.
I can't imagine you wanting to be reclusive.
Yeah, well, yeah, I did, because
How did that work out for you?
Well, I wanted my personal time, and I just didn't want to be, you know, involved, you know? And for a little while, it was okay.
For a little bit of your own comfort.
For a little
okay.
while, we're going home. Yeah, but then when we got involved in like a congregation, we actually got involved in fellowship and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a new meaning of humbleness and actually started to like it. You know, it's finding out about people and finding out that it takes people to help people, and that I even found joy, you know, even when I was younger. I couldn't stand the idea of having to pick up afterwards or clean up or to serve. And as I've gotten older, I've enjoyed even the serving part.
Oh, yeah.
Which is picking up that trash and vacuuming stuff or bringing food or mm-hmm. doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, I'm almost guessing that maybe this thing called congregations or fellowships were a way for us to learn to be humble. Because, I mean,
it really does.
I think that's a classroom.
You because people, if we put our trust in people,
yeah,
you put your trust in me, mm-hmm. I'm going to let you down over time.
Right.
We know the one that won't. See, I think, but yet we need each other, but there's a line there, isn't there? And it's hard sometimes because some of the ones that you really felt like you knew,
mm-hmm.
kind of sometimes we just don't measure up, do we?
Yeah, so maybe that's our classroom. Maybe it's an area to where we learn how to be humble before God, which is that Micah 6:8 text.
Yeah.
You know, do justly, love kindness, love mercy, and to walk humbly.
That's the key. Walk humbly.
Yeah.
With Yahweh.
I mean, think about it. You guys ever been in a group or a group setting of any kind, and you had to learn that maybe your argument didn't work or your ideas didn't fly and you had to go with someone else's ideas?
Yeah.
I mean, you ever been there?
Oh. Totally.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Lots of times.
Yeah, you've actually been on a board, right?
A few of them, a board or two. Yeah.
Did you ever lose?
Yeah. when I was the president of the board, I did as well.
And did you have to walk humbly?
I did. You know, I was. I don't remember the issue, but I remember the feeling of, okay, I guess I'm the odd one out here, but I got to lead this. Okay, we're going. This is the direction we're going now. So
this is what we're doing.
We're doing.
Yeah. You know, I even know back in some of your early life, you had to even go drive bus for a bunch of campers, right? A bunch of little kids. Were you ever humbled by driving bus?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's got to be the worst.
I wanted to do other jobs. I wanted to work on the waterfront, and mm-hmm. I got put, you know, driving a truck for a summer. And I had spent a bunch of time getting my lifeguard training. I learned how to swim properly. I had never learned all of my swim strokes and stuff, and I had to learn all of that. And then they put me in a truck. So go to town.
They said, man, I worked, and I wanted to be a water safety person, and I wanted this job, and now you gave me a driving job.
Yeah.
And I was ready to exercise my water skills.
Yeah, exactly. That's got to be humbling.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. I mean, Rick, you ever run across that to where, you know, hey, you thought you wanted something and the Lord or someone else gave you another job and you had to learn to do that instead?
Oh, I think everybody's had, you know, it doesn't, you know, I think most of the time it usually doesn't work out quite like, or sure, not in our timing.
Like we wanted it.
Like we wanted to, you know. But he is, it's all about, and I think the sooner in life, the earlier in life, we can learn that it's not about, it's really not about what we want, is it?
No.
It's really not. It's his work.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can, the earlier in life that we can learn that it's not about us, and it doesn't matter what I want, it's that I think you just go with it, and it's just a, I think that's kind of part of the spirit-filled walk.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
One of the things I've been dealing with right now is when my prayer life, I have been telling Yahweh, this is what I want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I want, but I know that my want may not be
your want,
so your will be done.
That's hard to do.
Yeah. And so that's kind of where I've been struggling with, if not struggling, but what I've been working through is letting him know what I want. At the same time, what I want more is what his will is.
Mm. So that you may be glorified. We were actually just reading this in Luke a couple Sabbaths ago, to where a voice came down from heaven and Yahweh glorified himself, because Yeshua is saying, this voice came down from heaven so that you may know who Yahweh is, so that he may be glorified. Even Yeshua said this right up to the point of death. You know, not my will, but your will be done, so that you be glorified.
Yeah.
You know, Moses had to learn this a lot. Imagine Moses' prayer. Okay, Father, okay, you've put me second in command. I've led armies. I'm the guy. I am the guy to lead Israel out of here. And he has every credential. He is the guy. And then Yahweh says, well, I need you to go lead some sheep for a while.
Because don't be a sheep herder.
And I finally get out why he did that. I mean, because he's going, these aren't normal people. You're going to need a heck of a lot of patience.
Mm.
Right?
And it's kind of interesting that he had him lead sheep.
Yeah, right.
Sheep will make you patient.
Huh. Because what right? is everything, what are all the parables? Who are we in all of these parables?
We're like sheep. Fade me.
Fade me. I know, right?
Oh, I had sheep. Oh, man.
Did you really have sheep?
One time.
One time. And that was it.
Then you were humbled.
We've had them all, but sheep.
You don't like sheep.
It's kind of humbling he calls a sheep. In a good way, I guess.
I wish you guys could actually be in the studio with us right now and look at Rick's face. I mean, he's just smiling from ear to ear going, sheep, man, no.
Man. Yeah, you have cows, and, you know, all you do is see a bunch of white faces out there looking at you.
Uh-huh.
They're pretty patient animals.
Really?
They really are. I mean, even horses, they're,
you know,
they're screaming and carrying on. The cows just sitting there.
Looking at you.
We're waiting. They're really patient animals. I love them. Real bovine.
Just give me grass.
Yeah, just give me some grass. And even when they don't have it, they're still, but I mean, they're just the most patient animals. I just appreciate that, the creation of others.
Well, you guys, we're coming up on our break here, and I just want to, you know, if you want to tell someone to come join in, we're going to have Linda Watson on soon, and we want to invite you to come on with the wise guys and say, hey, let's find out what she has to offer.
Well, call us at
503-589-1220. Hey, you got it.
Yes, 1220.
And do you have that phone number where people can
call in? On any phone, 605-562-9746, and listen in. It's really the only way I can do it at home. Don't go away.
What up?
To Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the nations.
And right now I'm praying that you're on the airway with us. going, you know, Father, help us all this sound. Okay? But in when I look at it, he is helping me. It starts with an H. It's called, oh, be humble, Roland. Okay, so this is what we have to deal with. So, it's kind of what it goes with.
Yeah, that question of do we ask Yahweh to humble us, which kind of means throw us down on the ground and make us small, and is that what we want? To be just on our knees.
Humble enough.
Humble and feel like that we're not what we think we are. You know, that we don't have the value that we want ourselves to have, even though it's very valuable to him.
Yeah.
But in our minds, we feel like we should be valued more, right?
Well, and it does really make you realize, doesn't it, that you're not, that we're not in control.
Right.
We're not. We're not in control. Ultimately, he is, and there's just certain things that we just, that we have to go through in life that we have no control. Like, I know how you're praying for your son daily, and we're all praying. But ultimately, that's where you got to relinquish that.
Yeah.
You just said it. Yeah. Father, your will, not my will, be done on earth as it is in heaven today. And that's why I think the heavenly, even Yeshua says when you pray, he told us how to pray. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes it's not easy to do that, is it? Because you want it so bad.
Yeah.
You want,
You know, like I'm a small business owner.
Sure.
And I run our family business. I'm in charge of things,
right?
You know, any of our employees, when they needed, you know, some help, they need to know which direction to go. They come to me and I tell them, okay, let's do this and we'll go this way. So I'm making all of these decisions. Mm-hmm. It feels like I have a level of importance, but if I'm supposed to be humble,
mm-hmm.
what does that look like? How do I live that out?
That's the question. It's not easy sometimes, especially when things are seemingly, when they're not working out. Because, you know, when you're a business owner, of course, you're dependent on other people, aren't you?
Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You are on with the wise guys, and it's a blessing to have you here with us, and we want to thank you for your patience as we love each other.
As we try to navigate through the technical challenges.
Yeah. The interwebs.
The interwebs.
Yes.
So I'm going to look for the person that we're going to be talking to with right now and see if we can find her, and haven't been able to quite do that yet. So, hey, Rick, Gus, can you guys just continue? I mean, I would love for you guys to pull up.
Wait, Rick, Gus?
Oh, yeah.
Aaron.
Boy, that is a terrible habit,
yes.
Right?
Oh, boy.
you are only a little sidetracked.
Yeah, just a little.
Oh, it's easy to do.
So we're trying to figure out who to add to the call. So while I'm listening to someone that's highly important here at the moment, I wonder if you guys can continue to talk about humbleness. Talk about I think that what's so amazing is what you guys have been through within your own life to experience humbleness.
Well, yeah, Rick and I were just talking about, where I'm at, and, you know, my little baby boy is in the hospital, and, you know, there's nothing I can do. You know, as a father, I want to, you know, do all of this care and stuff, but there's nothing that I can do. I don't have a medical degree. I don't work at that hospital. I don't work at any hospital, matter of fact.
All you can do is hold him.
Yeah. And that's a limited amount of time. And, you know, so I'm very humbled in this process of, you know, my son. And it's been brutally hard to just be just there. And that's all I've got.
Yeah, well, you know, Father's Day, how long, let's see, he was, you said when he was first born, what, 1 pound, 14 ounces?
1 pound, 14 ounces.
And he's now heading towards 3 pounds?
He's been over three and then under three, so he's just kind of, you know, going back and forth right about the 3 pound mark. And so,
that is humbling.
Yeah. But as we know, you know, Yahweh is in control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I've said from the beginning with everybody in the hospital is there's two people in control, Yahweh and my son. You know, those are the first two that are in control, and everybody else is just following their lead.
Life, trying to, you know, and it's a one-day process, isn't it? One day at a time. That's like one step at a time. It really has been.
Yeah. One day at a time, sweet Jesus.
Yeah.
In our case, Yeshua. It still works.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, you know, then I have a friend that reconnected with me.
Yeah.
You remember back a year or two ago, remember where Vic would, my friend Vic?
Yeah.
And he has been just going, he's 3 years of just anxiety, just going through the fire. And he's gotten to a place now where he feels like he can't even take a shower. He's just fearful.
Wow.
Of just everything. I mean, you just can't realize what that would feel like, just to be so anxious about everything that you just can't make a decision. And so if, when you think about it, pray for Vic. Father knows exactly where he's at, but he just needs our prayers. He really does, along with so many, Josiah and
so
you
is,
know, all
is,
of our.
Is this, is that the reason that I think we're called, and again, maybe I'm wrong, but to have a congregation of some sort.
Yes, to come alongside one another,
to support one another.
Right.
Like when someone's down and they need assistance, that it's there, and there's enough in that group that they can humble themselves and help that other person.
And help that other person and do things that they can't do because they're up at the hospital. Just little things, but to that, you know, it makes a huge difference, though.
Yeah.
It's just one thing those families don't have to worry about. When the Mishpoka, our assembly of like-minded believers come together, when one of us are going through the fire, and we all, if we live long enough, we'll go through it some way, somehow.
Well, that's where, you know, I've been, and this congregation that I'm a part of has you know, really stepped up, and I just want to thank all of you, and you two are some of those guys who come and just help in my yard. I mean, literally, I had grass that was, you know, 3-4 feet high.
Yeah.
You know,
we came and mowed it.
Yeah.
You know, so not a big thing, but yet a huge thing.
Oh,
but
yeah,
that,
huge,
you know, because
huge for us. Yeah.
They can't do it. They're at the hospital. So, you know, that's where the little things, but.
Okay, so that's the end result of a group that can help one another. But why do groups many times fail? Is it a lack of humbleness, or is it egos, or what is it? What causes it?
It's the people.
Well, life gets in real life. Everybody's busy. We get that. Everybody is busy. You got it. But we're learning. We're trying to learn to make time for the things that really aren't the important things. I mean, we know everything's priorities, isn't it?
Right.
We all have
24
hours, and it's all priorities. And we're trying to learn to make time for things that are really important. But again, we got it. But have you ever heard somebody say, man, I was in the hospital, nobody from the congregation came to visit me?
Isn't it terrible?
But we didn't know it.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
So then if we know it and then nobody comes, that's a different story. Then you have a complaint.
You've got a valid
but
one.
We have to know. And, man, I can't believe it. Well, you know, I didn't know you were in the hospital. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, we would have tried to do everything we could to come visit you and pray with you. At least we'd know how to pray, even if we were out of town or something.
Well, how about this thought on that?
Yeah.
That, yes, they may be in this congregation, in this group of people, but did they know them well enough to actually realize, wait, Steve's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Steve been? What's going on with Steve?
Yeah, we need to make a call.
We need to call.
Is he okay?
Oh, hey, Steve's in the hospital. We need to go see him.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so when Father brings somebody to your mind, I think probably we know it's not probably the enemy bringing it to our minds. So make the call. I think those calls are more important than we could ever
So then that's something that can break up a group, which is hurt feelings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And again, that could be a form of ego, though, couldn't it be? I mean, like, if I have hurt feelings, is it my ego that have gotten in the way? No one heard me.
It could be.
No one listened to me. No one did this for me. I mean, that's a form of egoness, I think.
Right, because what is ego? Ego is, you know, self-centeredness.
Right. So what else would get in the way? I mean, imagine you're new and you join a congregation of sorts, and maybe you feel that you should be doing something of importance within that group, and then you aren't asked. Would that be something that would?
Well, that sounds like this. What you were just saying, it still sounds like ego right there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you know, I've just joined this group. I've got this talent. I need to be asked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was still center focus. It's, you know, focused on self, right?
But then once tomorrow, like you, rather than you joining the water dock to save kids in the water, they gave you
you're not driving.
They gave you the bus route instead. That was a bummer, right?
It was.
I'm a lifeguard. I should be able to save people.
Yeah. but at the same time, I learned a lesson in that.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, I'm still part of the team.
Oh.
I'm a very, very vital part of the team.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the job I had was the camp purchaser. I would go to town to buy the products, stuff that needed to be done that wasn't being delivered.
So the camp would not be able to operate if you didn't go fulfill that need for the camp. Somebody's got to go purchase those items.
That's team play.
Yeah, you bet it is. And, you know, is there a lot of glory in that? No.
Hmm.
But, you know, it's fulfilling a need.
Right.
And, you know, that's all, we're all different parts of the same body.
Mm-hmm.
And we all can't be the head or the...
Whatever.
Some of us are the tail, you know.
And the tail does wag the dog. The tail does wag the dog. I just need to remind us of that. And just because the dog has a head.
I guess there's a movie I haven't had a chance to. Have you guys seen Wag the Dog?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I think everybody's seen it but me.
And actually, rather appropriate for today even still.
Right.
My wife said. She saw it. And she says, man, that's what it is. We need this.
Yeah. You know, I've always thought that is the true form of leadership.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in the background, I mean, we've always had leadership in a hierarchical pyramid, but I think it's reversed.
Listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the nations.
Hey, we are so pleased. We have a person with us this morning. We're just dying to talk with her. Her name is Linda Watson. She does a show here at the Hebrew Nation Online called The 12 Tribes, and we're just really anxious to pick her brain. And, you know, those of you that have been listening with us, we've been talking about being humble and how important it is to go to the classroom of humbleness.
Mm.
And we're trying to tie this in and saying, you know, do we learn this through a congregation or a fellowship? And is that the purpose of a congregation or fellowship? Maybe that's what it's there for, is to teach us to be humble or to reach out. I don't know.
You know, Roland, you said you started out with talking about a classroom.
Yeah.
Well, is it a classroom of one? Or is it a classroom of multiple people?
Well, that's what we're going to be talking to Linda about, because she kind of studies this history thing.
Yeah, history.
And I'm kind of curious about what congregations were like back in the old days and maybe what they should look like in the new days.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Trying to find out information. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. How are y'all?
Fine, Linda.
We're doing okay over here.
Yes.
Well, I heard y'all, there's a tsunami that just hit was going to hit this morning. They were watching, they have a warning out for, because of Japan, Japan had a major earthquake this morning. I guess Sean may have known that or didn't know it.
No,
they're really watching for tsunamis right now along that Pacific coast in Japan. So yeah, that's the last I heard.
Unbelievable. Where do you live, Linda?
I'm in Louisiana. I'm about 26 miles out of New Orleans.
Okay.
And I wasn't raised here. I was an Army brat and came here to work for Shell Oil. And stayed because my kids stayed and my I have my grandchild here. So you know, I'm not likely to move. Once you have a grandchild, that's how it works.
We get it. We get it.
Hey, so Linda,
at least I do.
How did you get into this history sort of thing? I mean, so.
Well, I always had an interest in history. I have a degree in history, and I read the book by Stephen Collins, and it just set me on fire. Stephen and I talk from time to time, and the teaching that he did on the 12 tribes just was phenomenal to me. So I just took it a little further and did more research. And once I got started, I retired. And then once I got started, I just couldn't stop. And that's basically, I got invited to, be on Messianic Lamb first. And then I got, they asked me to do a radio show. And then the same thing happened with Hebrew Nation.
Right.
So yeah, and I do travel from time to time and go to different congregations, and I teach, do presentations on history. And one of the things I do teach is from the time of the Messiah all the way up to the Protestant Reformation, which is incredible history, and how the church, what happened with the church, and who they were. It's very interesting because most people are under misconception about what went on during that time because they think that the Catholic Church just came in and dominated Christianity, and that couldn't be further from the truth. That didn't happen until like the 12th century, and then they only had control until the 14th century. So they only had they only had 200 years of control, and the rest of the time the Protestant churches, which is the ones I say basically are, that were basically some of them were Sabbath keepers at that time. Those groups of people were the ones that were the dominant through history. And most people don't know that. Josephus even wrote, he said, at the time he was writing, there wasn't anybody that wasn't keeping the Sabbath. There was no groups not keeping the Sabbath. And so that's amazing history because the church, the Catholic Church, didn't move to Sunday into 190 A.D. When they moved to Sunday, they pushed it into their church in 190. So they were keeping the Sabbath almost 200 years before they actually changed. Before there was actually any change.
Yeah, I'd actually heard that. Hey, Linda, I want to slow you down just for a second, and if you don't mind, because you keep mentioning this word. And I want to make sure we're clear on the word. You keep mentioning churches. And what does that mean to us? Can you create a picture for us what that might have looked like? So you have early churches and you have the Catholic Church. Is this a whole body of small?
Well, you had two major, there's actually three major fractions that came through history. One was the Celtic Church, which was small congregations here and there, but they were all, Gillis, who was a historian that wrote at that time, he said, these people in the Celtic Church do too much Judaizing. They Judaize on everything. And so that tells you that the Celtic Church was keeping Passover, and they didn't actually move off any of that until the 12th century. That's what people don't realize. It was the 11th, 12th century when they began to migrate off of keeping the Sabbath, the holy days. They were Sabbath keepers for the majority of their time. Mm-hmm. And that church extended all the way up to Scandinavia. So it was in Ireland, it was in Scandinavia, it was in, Britain, Scotland. That was the Celtic church. Then you had another church called the Assyrian church, which was in the east. When the people came out of Jerusalem, they went north, and they went into the area of Asia Minor, Syria, and an area called, the first place they went was a place called Pella. In that region, okay, is where the majority of the believers were, and that was called the Assyrian church. Now, they had like a patriarch over them, you know, like a patriarch over them. The Celtic church did not, but the Assyrian church had a patriarch over them.
Yeah.
And then there was the church that was developing in Rome as the Germanic tribes began to push their way in. They had already understood about the Sabbath and holy days, and they were pushing their way in.
I can't hear.
Okay, so,
Hey, hold on just a minute. Was that your grandchild?
Yeah, he's trying to use the phone.
Right,
so I apologize. Anyway,
Linda, hold on just a second. We have a call in. Let's see if we can pick him up. They might have a question for you. So hang on tight.
Okay. Sure.
Thank you. Welcome to the Inspiration Morning Show. You're on with the Wise Guys. Who's calling us, and what's your question or comment for Linda? Hold on a minute. Let's go ahead and try that again. Good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the Wise Guys. And who's calling in? What's your question or comment for Linda? I guess I lost them.
Okay.
That's okay. So, hey, we're back on with you, Linda. Sorry to interrupt, but go ahead. And you're talking to us about the different types of churches and the types of leadership. Go ahead.
Okay. So at that point, there was a line going through. You started with John, who was an apostle. Then you went to Polycarp. Then you went to Polycrates and Irenaeus. And it just kept going. And that line would, these people, you know, the majority of the people in Europe was keeping the Sabbath. And that's what people don't realize. They were keeping the Sabbath, you know, except Western Europe. Western Europe began to start developing ties with Rome around the 6th century, but they still were keeping the Sabbath. They were still fighting about the Sabbath the entire time in Europe. So there was, like I said, there was two popes. One was in the East and one was in the West. And the Pope in the East, which was Leo the Ninth, wrote a letter to Silarius, who was the Pope in the East, and he said, "What's the matter with you? I'm going to excommunicate you because you people are not fasting on the Sabbath."
Huh.
So the way that they tried to get people to stop keeping the Sabbath is that they required through a council called Elvira. So Elvira that was the name of the council.
No,
it said that you had to fast on Saturday. That was the requirement, is that you had to fast on Saturday. Well, Michael Solaria says, we will not do that. That was the split between the Roman church and the Eastern church. And believe it or not, they split over the Sabbath. That was what broke split the two churches down the middle. People do not realize this. But the churches were still, there was always this struggle going on, and they make it sound like in history that there was just small little groups of heretics everywhere. And these small little groups of heretics were just constantly, in conflict with the Catholic Church, which was true, but they weren't small. They were large. And they had small little congregations just like we have now. And that's gone through the centuries. People had small little groups. The Pilgrims were in like a group less than 20, 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
There was three churches that were in Britain, and they were Sabbath-keeping churches that we know of that the Pilgrims were associated with. So these were small little groups that they had. But as you read their history, you found out that they were all of these groups were in always splitting and making new groups. And this has been our history from the beginning.
So,
you think it's just happened recently that churches split and have it's a characteristic among God's churches to go through these conflicts.
Now, Linda, there always seems to be a pattern. Okay, And the pattern for me is that we have a small group of people who develop a church, and then that church becomes large. And, you know, because even with the people who came over and settled in the U.S. here or North America, they were small because the ships were pretty small. But then they grew and they formed these churches and they were large. That's why we have churches throughout our countryside. They're big buildings.
Yes.
So then, and then they split again. And so is it inherent?
It's inherent through the process.
Yes.
It seems to be part of the process.
Okay, but some of the process.
I'm not saying that the process is correct. I'm just saying that is what has transpired through history. So even in the small groups, they would be in disarray. They
yes.
would be in disagreement. All right, so right before the American Revolution, there was a huge revival in America, the largest one they ever had.
Yep.
And it was led by a man named George Whitefield, but most people don't realize that he came from a church of 8 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in Oxford. And guess who was in the church with him? John and Charles Wesley.
Yep.
They were all Sabbath Passover keeping. If you read the journal for George Whitefield, he talks about how he went to Scotland and had this huge Passover.
Yep.
The biggest one he had ever had. So these guys, they were all, see, most of these churches that when they formed in America, many of them were Sabbath keeping churches because the Methodist church started out as a Sabbath keeping church.
Mm.
And this is what people don't realize. And one of the things that John Wesley told the people, don't, when you get a size of a church of 12 people, then split it and form a new church, but always keep your churches small. That was his advice to the people. And interesting thing is that they had a lot of things we call tent revivals. And so the Methodist Church has wrote the history of the tent revivals. This is unbelievable history. Because it says they never had a tent revival in the winter. They only had them in the spring and in the summer and the fall.
Yep.
And sometimes they would have them for a week. And sometimes they'd have them only for 2 days. And so what they really don't understand in their history is as tent revivals were people in this country keeping the holy days.
Yeah. Well, I actually come from the SDA group, and they started a thing called camp meeting, and that was in the fall.
Yes.
And they were actually thinking about Sukkot, and it lasted 7 days.
Yes.
With an 8-day stay overtime.
Yes.
Which I thought was really funny. You know, but hey, I want to take you back to the inherently thing that we talk about, because we always talk about small groups, we talk about large groups, we have some people that say large churches are evil, and then other people say, well, small churches don't accomplish anything. How do you deal with that? I still want to wrap my mind around the pictures of what was actually going on in our history and the effectiveness of it. I know, like, I come from a background of larger churches, and the wonderful thing that larger churches can offer is the sending out of missionaries and developing funds and helping families. And then sometimes the smaller groups I enjoy establish community or trust or belief or encouragement. How do you see those churches working along side by side, the large one versus the smaller one? And is there a place for either one of them?
Yes, that's why we have 7 churches mentioned in the book of Revelations. Each one has its own function and purpose.
So tell us about that.
You know, that's, for example, Thyatira. It says that you are a church of love and service, and you serve people, and I commend you for that, but you still won't give up Jezebel. Jezebel meaning the pagan holy days.
Mm.
Because that's what they were. And so that's referring to the Protestant churches, I feel, because they still keep Christmas, they still keep Easter, they still keep the pagan days, but they have unbelievable service.
Yeah.
And so he tells each one of these churches what they've done right and what they've done wrong, because it seems like every one of them had done some things right.
Yeah.
And so... All of these churches have a function and a place, but there's a church that comes up that is going to be not in an area of a wall. So it's going to be the people that the Father has selected, and he refers to them as his tower. Now, they're referred to as the tower in Matthew 21, where it says, I'm going to set up a tower. I'm going to move this work that I'm doing to another country, and I'm going to set up a tower. And then you read Micah 4, verse 8, and it says, my flock is going to be, I'm going to build a tower among my flock. And so very interesting, because what he's saying is that he's going to raise up people to do a work at the end time. And that work is what we're doing right now. Many people don't understand why is the Father showing me this? Why is the Father teaching me that? Why am I keeping the holy days? Why am I keeping? What is all this for a purpose? And it very plainly tells you that in Ezekiel 24, because I'll just read Ezekiel 24, because I think that's a critical verse for everybody today to understand. Let me get to it real quick. It won't take me but a second here. And it's Ezekiel 24, and it's the last two verses in Ezekiel 24, and it says, he that escapes in that day shall come unto thee. Thee meaning us, the believers. He says, they're going to come, these people that escape. In other words, there's coming a time when people are going to have to leave this country because of war, famine, pestilence, or whatever the Father brings down. Okay? Mm-hmm. So he says, these people that escape in that day means the end time, and I think we're sitting in it, shall come unto thee to cause thee to hear with thy ears. Now, in that day shall thy mouth be open to him which is escaped. And thou shalt speak and be no more dumb. So right now it tells you all through scripture that you are dumb and you can't hear because you're not allowed to talk because people don't want to hear it. Hmm. They don't want to hear it. But he says there's a revival coming, and he says, thou shalt be a sign unto them, and they shall know that I am the Lord. So you have that's why you are going through all the things you're doing right now, all the things that you're learning. So you are being prepared for a job to teach these people. And when you look in the book of Revelations, it is the innumerable multitude that comes up at the end time. And the 144,000 are the people that probably are going to teach them. And there's many, many verses that cover this. And that is our function.
And Linda, hold on just a minute, because this is a lot of information, and I want to clarify a couple things. When you talk about not wanting to hear, and I relate that even to the seven churches, and I relate the purpose of church or congregation or even ministry, I'm gathering from you is that the message of God's commands or Yahweh's feast days, those are things that people don't want to hear? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, absolutely the case.
Okay.
The laws that are pertaining to Torah. So we grew up, if we grew up and our ancestors came out of Europe,
yeah,
they were well established in Torah. And, I've been watching Downton Abbey lately, and I couldn't believe it at the watching this, because it's a very accurate how these people were so much, they were so in tune to following God's laws because it was inbred in them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have carried a lot of those laws into our morals and our values in this country, but we don't know it because we've lost that information.
Sure.
We don't know it. We don't understand our connection. So when foreigners come into our land, which they have, and they say, these laws that you're doing are crazy, because they came from an environment that didn't keep the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't keep it. So they can't make that connection as to why you want to do some of the things that we do. And we do it because it's inbred in us. It's part of our DNA. It's come down through the centuries. And we have many laws in this country that came right out of Torah. Many laws. A good example is that you have two you are required to have two witnesses. That's talked about in Scripture, right? When you have a legal document. Well, you cannot sign a legal document in this country unless you have a witness. And you are one witness and the other person who signs is another witness.
Correct.
So how in the world does that come about? Because they realized that from Torah, that was one of God's laws and they understood it.
Yeah, we even understand an idea of a Sabbath day. We've just kind of lost the idea of a seventh-day Sabbath. I mean, but the churches, many of the Christian churches still keep a Sabbath day, and they actually preach about a Sabbath day. It's just on a Sunday.
Well,
through history, Sunday was never called the Sabbath. It was always called the Lord's Day.
Yeah.
That's how they distinguished it, because they was keeping both. That's why we have weekends now.
Yeah.
Because they were having both. They were keeping, in the Western churches, they were keeping Sunday as the Lord's Day, and they were keeping the Sabbath also, but they were a lot of pressure on them to stop working on, to start working on the Sabbath. Now, you know, there's a much to this history, but the person who did the most damage throughout history was somebody named Theodosius, who was a Roman emperor that pushed in. He changed the pagan names, the pagan names to Christian names. And he told the people, you got 3 months to convert to Catholicism.
Right.
You got 3 months. And if you don't do that, you're not going to be able to work, which is exactly what the scripture tells you is going to happen at the end time.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to work and you're going to lose your inheritance, your children, you will lose your home. You got 3 months.
And we won't, you know, that's that concept of you not being able to buy or sell, correct?
Right, exactly the same concept. So it's history repeating itself, right?
Yes.
And so this is, he did more damage than any other emperor before him. And interesting enough that was the time frame that the bubonic plague started, was under his empire, while he was reigning. The father was not happy with him, and there was as many as 10,000 people dropped dead daily in Constantinople at the peak of this bubonic plague.
Unbelievable.
So Linda, the father was really, he was all over him.
Linda, hold on just a second. We got someone on air with us. Good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You've called into the Wise Guys, and what's your question or comment for Linda?
Listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the nations.
Hey, Linda. So we want to back up with you. I think we have a delay going on at the moment, but it should be clear. You're up in just a moment.
Okay, I'm here.
All right, Linda. So we're talking to you about churches and the development of things that we believe in the U.S. and I want to talk to you more about the concept of the purpose of church, fellowship, or congregation. Do you see a purpose for these things? I mean, or should people just be out on their own, evangelizing out on their own? I know even when Yeshua sent the disciples out, he said, well, you need to go at least in twos and not just to be on your own. Is there a purpose for a group of people?
The purpose for people to fellowship? Yeah, well, for one, yes, because, you know, it's very interesting that you bring that up, because all the holy days for the world are associated with family. They're all associated with family. So Christmas is kept with family. Easter is kept with family. The Father designed his holy days to be different. He designed those holy days so that You don't just keep them with family. You keep them with the congregation. That way no one gets left out.
Interesting.
And so part of the reason for having congregations is to make sure that no one gets left out, because if people get isolated and they don't have church groups or people to associate with, they just go, eventually they'll just go about their merry way. And they forget about what the Father has taught them, and they, you know, he'll prick their heart from time to time, and they'll remember certain things, but they get separated from the body itself because they're not communicating with the body. And so that's the critical purpose for it, is to keep everybody in the Word. Yes.
Oh, man. Oh, shoot. Okay, so I see.
Huge light bulb over here.
I mean, most of the arguments, I have a lot of pastors that are friends within the Sunday church and friends in the Seventh-day keeping churches.
Uh-huh.
I was a pastor for many years. And you had mentioned a man back in the old days. What was it? Theodosius.
He was the emperor of Rome.
Yeah.
And he was the emperor on the western part of Rome. He was actually in that time frame when he was trying to push in Catholicism.
Yeah.
And he was the one that actually said, you know, you've got 3 months or you lose everything. You lose your job, you lose your home, you lose any inheritance that goes to your kids. You must convert to Catholicism.
Yes.
And he also changed the pagan holy days to the names of Christmas and Easter.
Thank you.
Was the one that physically did that.
Okay, but what I'm thinking of is that you had mentioned even earlier before that, you said many of the higher ranking church members were saying everyone's Judaizing too much. And
yeah.
And you coined that with the feast days. Now, what's fascinating to me is that when you look up Leviticus and you look up those feast days, the very first feast day is the seventh day, the Sabbath day.
Yes.
And so their argument on taking that out of the Ten Commandments would be the seventh day is part of the Jewish feast, and they label that and saying, therefore, that gives us reason not to keep the Sabbath. Am I looking at that correctly?
Yes, yes. And so that came through the Alexander school. The Alexander school was the school that came in after the time of the Messiah, started by Philo. He was not a good man. He never wrote one word about the Messiah, although he lived at the time of the Messiah. And he started this school, and they had Clement, and they had Origen, and all of these were the Anti-Nicene fathers, and they were the ones. Clement was the one. And Justin Martyr were the two people responsible for changing Sunday to Sabbath to Sunday. Justin Martyr wrote a book called The Apologies,
uh-huh.
And Clement was the schoolmaster. He was head of the school of at Alexander. He was the one with Pope Victor in Rome that changed that.
Okay.
And so it wasn't enough for them to change it. They wanted to force their beliefs on everyone else. And that's been the way that they've done that through the centuries. Well, the Israelites through centuries have always left people to their own religions. They always have. And so even though they were ruling in Western Europe, if you wanted to be a Catholic, you could be a Catholic, and they allowed that. But the emperors that came up from out of Rome, many of them, they weren't satisfied with just setting up, their churches. They wanted everybody to be in unison. They wanted them all to keep the same religions and belief system. And that's been, you know, some of the downfall of some of these churches through the centuries.
Sure.
That's why they've gone through what they've gone through.
Linda,
Linda,
hang on just a second. We're going to see if we can pick up two more questions that came in. Good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the Wise Guys. Are we hearing who's on the line with us? For some reason, I cannot seem to pick these people up.
It's okay.
Again, we apologize. You've called in with us a couple times, and your name has an ER in front of us, and for some reason we can't pick you up. I apologize. We have another question that came in to you via text, Linda. It says this. She heard that creation actually happened in Africa, so why wouldn't the Holy Land be there also?
So what is – I didn't understand the question, though. Can you explain it?
This person called in or texted in and wants to know if creation actually happened in Africa. I don't know how we got on that with churches, but hey. And okay. So did creation actually happen in Africa? And if so, isn't the Holy Land in Africa? Do you have any comments on that?
And well, we all know that the Holy Land had to probably be in at least before the flood in the Middle East, because we can see the archaeological findings so that we know that. But when Noah, he basically was in the area of Turkey, Armenia, in that area. That was where he settled. And very interesting history, because many of those people spread themselves throughout Europe as well as into the Middle East. And, of course, you know, the Holy Land only came about because of Abraham.
Right.
Because he received that blessing, that land blessing, right?
Right.
And so that Holy Land, you know, the land of Cana, and I guess this is how I'm hoping I'm answering the lady's question, that came about through Abraham. But the Father was always about witnessing to people and teaching other people. That was what he wanted to do. He wanted to spread his beliefs. That was always what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And he finished that work that he had at the time of the Messiah. He finished it with the Pharisees. He said, "You are done." If you read Matthew 21, that's what he's saying. He says, "I'm going to take and I'm going to end it with you, and I'm going to create another work with a more fruitful nation." And that fruitful nation would be Israel, that's began to spread its way across Europe. And that's how Christianity and faith has been spread, is through these Europeans.
Yeah.
It went into Africa, it went into Asia, it went into South America, everywhere through these Europeans. And so that's what he's referencing there when he tells you he left them, because they were a form of what we call the fig tree. And so when he withered that fig tree, he really ended the work of the Pharisees. And the next work that came up was the grapevines. And that grapevine, you know, specifically is called, Isaiah 5 verse 7 says the grapevine is Israel.
Right.
It's the second era of what they were to do when they went into Europe. He wanted it spread everywhere. And it's interesting.
Hold on, Linda. I have to slow you up just a minute, because, again, you're saying the Europeans went everywhere and they established or even started religion. So if I'm looking at that, all these places, I mean, we started having churches and fellowships being built everywhere. So is that a positive thing? I mean, many times we always look at church buildings and think of it as a negative thing.
Yes, that's what they did. They basically went everywhere. Now, I do a teaching on how they went into Asia and into India and into that whole side of the world. But people don't realize that in China alone, there's 300,000 Christians. It's 300 million Christians.
Yes.
I'm saying. And so it's bigger than the United States. The United States is 380 million people, right? Something in that neighborhood. Well, China has almost the population of the United States that are Christians.
Unbelievable.
That's unbelievable, but I mean, it's a huge place, right?
Right. Yeah.
So that's one out of every five. You know, and they also meet in very small groups. It's they don't have sects like we have. They don't have like the Methodist Church, the Presbyterian Church, the different churches, right? they're more like us in that they have little small groups that they meet and they study the scripture on their own. And well, very interesting. It's very interesting because it hasn't been, it's not just about, the European nations. It's, they have spread this everywhere. And well, that was the intent.
Well, they have to because they're under persecution. I mean, like if you're not in a church that is approved by the government, then they're going to take you out. I mean, so yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me how people grow in the middle of persecution. Like when we look at the book of Acts and we start to see groups springing up like crazy, that was done, correct, during a huge amount of persecution. And it
Absolutely.
Seems to fly.
Because people began to wake up and they began to say, oh my goodness, what's going on here? That's the same thing that happened when the bubonic plague hit in the 1400s. Now, when the bubonic plague hit in the 1400s, the father kept the bubonic plague eastward. It always was in the Eastern Byzantine Empire. But it began in around the 1400 BC. It began to spread its way across Europe because the people, again, had backslid. And it's very interesting because the Protestant Reformation was a revival of the people. It was a revival of the people. The people began to say, oh, my goodness, you know, what have we been doing? We got to get ourselves straight. And when the father sees the heart change, he will send a leader. Well, the leader that he sent at that time was John Wycliffe. John Wycliffe was a Sabbath keeper. He was a holy day keeper. And he was in the face of the Catholic Church the entire time. In fact, the Catholic Church came to kill him, and he died before they got there. So they had already buried him when the Catholics came to get him. So it's interesting. They dug his bones up and ground them up because they were so angry they didn't get to kill him. And so I know it sounds sick, but that is the actual truth. They dug his bones up.
Oh,
and
my word.
He really was in their face because he was telling them, look, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. And he had that's where the Protestant Reformation came from, was through his teachings. And it spread through into Europe through Randolph Hess and some of the other teachers at that time that eventually wound up with Martin Luther, right? Now, Martin Luther didn't start that revival. It already had began, and yep. It began in England. And so interesting stuff, because when you start getting punished, that's when you start paying attention.
Yeah.
And they were having the bubonic plague. They were having a drought. You know, those same things that you see talked about in Scripture, drought, famine, pestilence, you know, and war. And they saw the handwriting on the wall and said, hey, we got to straighten ourselves up.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Just really interesting history.
It is interesting. And we're going to have to let you go, but not before we promote you just a little bit. Just for those that are listening, I want you to know that Linda is on air on the Hebrew Nation Radio at 5 p.m. on a Thursday. It's 5 p.m. on a Thursday. She's also in at 4 p.m. on a Friday. And for those of you who like to stay up a little bit late, on a Sabbath Saturday evening, she's on at 10 p.m. So you can listen to Linda at Thursday at 5 and at Friday at 4 and on Sabbath at 10. And I just want you, and that's p.m. All those are p.m. So you guys, I just want to encourage you to listen to the history of your life. Listen to the 12 tribes as Linda talks you through these things. You're fascinating, Linda, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Well, I would love to sit down with you and go through this presentation I do. So next time I go up there, I'll do that. I'll do that presentation that I do that covers from the time of the Messiah all the way up to the Protestant Reformation. That is incredible history. Just
wow.
Unbelievable stuff.
Yes. So, we will have to get you up here. And to repeat it again, I had someone just text me. Those times that I gave everyone, that's Pacific Standard Time, okay? So 5 p.m., PST, no, PST,
yeah. Yes.
And then 4 on Friday and Saturday evening at 10. And, Linda, we're going to get you up here again, so hang on tight with us, and we really love you, and thank you for everything that you do.
Okay, thank you all for letting me come on, and I appreciate it. And I guess we'll say close for now, right?
Yes. Blessings on you, and be blessed immensely down there in Georgia.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Louisiana, but that's okay.
Yeah.
It's close. It's 2 states from Georgia. That's all right.
It's over there somewhere.
It's over there somewhere. Thanks for coming on.
This was fun.
Oh, good.
All right. We'll talk again.
Yes, we will. Wow.
That was a lot of history in a very short time.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and we're going to see if we can go ahead and bring in a couple callers now, because they've been trying really hard to reach us, and we're going to see if we can bring them on. Hey, let's try again. Good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the Wise Guys. Are you there with us? Good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on the air with the Wise Guys. Are you there with us? No. Wow. Okay. Never mind.
Okay.
Just can't seem to pick them up. Aaron, what did you learn?
Oh, my goodness.
We have about like 5 minutes to summarize, which is kind of our thing that we do. What did you learn from Linda?
Well, we have to – it's all about the groups. We've been in these groups.
Mm-hmm.
The group is what supports us individually, and that's how we grow spiritually, is when we're in a group of other like-minded believers.
Mm-hmm.
And when sometimes when the group gets too big, you know, issues will come up.
Mm-hmm. And even too small.
And even too small.
Linda had brought that up, is that we have small and we have large.
Yeah.
And they all seem to break.
Right.
And it seems to break for a reason.
Well, the common denominator in that, to me, that I'm seeing is people.
People. People who need people.
So, you know, to me, it doesn't sound like it's the group that is the issue. It's the people in the group that create an issue.
Yeah.
So, it's right? So I guess what I'm saying is not the dynamic of the group or the mm-hmm. size of the group, because clearly, you know, small groups have had issues, large mm-hmm. groups have issues, groups have issues.
Issues because people have issues, and yeah. people want to do those things. You know, I think the fascinating thing that I was reaping from what Linda was talking about is that even for 2 centuries after the church had split up, the Catholic Church and many of those other churches, they're all keeping Sabbath. And that to me was fascinating. And that it wasn't until there was powerful people who decided, hey, we don't want these Sabbaths anymore. And we don't want these things like these feast days.
Right.
And we want to get rid of them. And then you have probably people who argue about it and then leave over it. The other thing that's amazing too is that she had reminded us of is that during that time, there weren't just small fractions. There were huge churches and belief systems that were keeping the feast days and the Sabbath days.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just small little things that were scattered, because I don't think small little scatterings would have scared the Catholic Church very much. Do you?
I wouldn't imagine small, yeah. because they were a big, powerful church. And, you know, why would you be concerned with 12 guys over here?
Right. I mean, you wouldn't. I mean, that seems fascinating to me. If there's anyone else who wants to text in, you can actually go ahead and write us a little note on the email, which is 3wiseguys.
The number three.
wiseguys@hebrewnation.net. The number 3 wiseguys@hebrewnation.net. And then I'll pick that up and we can answer your question for you. There's a few people that have texted in too, and you can still do that. Or do the email. Or you can try calling in again. Maybe it's the line that's causing me some trouble. But we have 503-589-1220, and we'll try to reach you again. Linda Watson, again, can be listened to on the Hebrew Nation Radio online services. And this is all you have to do is look up Hebrew Nation Radio, and you'll go to the website, and you'll look under schedules and teachers, and you'll find her. And that's on Thursday evenings at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Friday evenings at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Times, and Saturday, Sabbath evening at 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Times. All right. So also, Aaron, I want to ask you this question. As you were listening to her talk, were we learning anything about humbleness?
So the information got to sort through it all.
I know. I mean, I'm listening to this, and I'm just being humbled from the aspect of going, wow, I really need to review my history.
Yeah.
I mean, and take some time and review it, and so I can answer people who might have questions, you know. Yeah. Why do you keep the Sabbath, Aaron? Why the seventh day rather than Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the other thing, too, is that I caught from her is that the Sunday-keeping churches are keeping Sabbath. They're just keeping it in a different way. And that Lord's Day was really important.
Yeah.
Sunday was the Lord's Day. They were called the Lord's Day because he rose. They view it as the first day that he's gone, even though we know from Scripture he'd already left the tomb.
Right.
I mean, so at the break of dawn, he ain't there.
Nope.
So, but I still get it. I get the understanding of it. Many times we want to combat or be angry at people who are in a church or people that keep a different day than us. And what I'm learning from her is not to be angry about it. Understand the historical context of it instead.
Right.
You know? I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. We still have people, too, that go, well, this looks like church. And they are angry at people who meet in a church.
Well, I think we need to define some of these terms.
Yeah.
You know, through the whole thing, we were talking about church.
Yeah.
Well, was it a group of, you know, a small group of people, or was it the large overriding church as a whole? Like we say the Christian church these days, and mm-hmm. when we mean, you know, everybody who would fall under, you know, Christ followers.
Sure.
You know, that's church. As well as, you know, the church building that's down the street, that's church
that's
too.
That's church.
You know, so when we say this looks like church, what does that mean?
You looked up the word congregation before.
Yes, yeah.
Many of us have known it in the Greek, being ecclesiastia. But sometimes it takes on a little different picture.
I got it right here. It says a group of people assembled for religious worship.
Hmm.
Some other interesting words in there.
Just in that description.
Yeah, because religious worship.
Hmm.
What do those two words mean?
I know, right? Well, our time is coming up here to close, so we're going to be losing people. And I hope that you guys have been inspired by
the darkness must flee from the living word. His light now shines, the darkness must flee.